Blog Talk Radio. Program devoted to uncovering the real truth on topics that make a difference in your life, with your host, Tony Wilde, whose goal is to get you to think about your world and what goes on in it. Our phone lines are open at 213-943-3625. Please call in and let your voice be heard, because your opinion does matter. 213-943-3625. We want to hear from you.
You can call in right now. We'll be on the air for an hour. Hey, it's good to be back. It is February 8th, 2015. We've been off the air for a little while, actually. We've had a little bit of a hiatus. And it's really good to be back. I'm excited. Truth Addicts is back in its regular time slot now here. It's Sunday, 12 o'clock Sunday afternoons. So for all of us sleepyheads who partied the night before, give you a little bit of time so you can take it easy. Soak it in. Glorious day right now. Our topic today is definitely something that a lot of people have had a lot of controversy over. Truth versus opinion. How real are aliens? No, not the illegal type. I mean the extraterrestrial type. You know, it's interesting how truth versus opinion. I have to start off with a clip here. I have some clips that I'm going to share with, and again, callers, please call in with your disbelief or your skepticism. I would love to hear from the skeptics out there who really find it difficult to believe in what we're about to talk about. Once again, the phone lines are open, 213-943-3625. Let's take a listen to this. Take a listen to this for a second, okay? Hold on.
July 20th, 1969. Astronauts Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin became the first men to land on the moon. Just like aliens visiting from another world. It had been the stuff of science fiction. Now, everything that could be imagined seemed possible. If mankind could travel the skies and go to other planets, why couldn't beings from other planets visit the Earth?
So, you know, a lot of this is not speculative. You know, I find it very interesting how the current skeptic genre or group will fight and fight and fight in lieu of so much physical. And, I mean, physical evidence. You know, in a court of law, we've got several types of evidence. There's primary, there's secondary, there's tertiary. There's eyewitness accounts, et cetera, et cetera. We've got video footage, photographic, and, of course, eyewitness. And I find that it's so interesting that in the extraterrestrial, macabre, arcane, or what have you world, so much of evidence is actually not looked upon. I mean, you'd have to have practically an alien rock fall on someone's head in order for the skeptics to be believers. There's thousands, ladies and gentlemen, there are thousands and thousands and thousands of factual data I don't mean a five-year-old boy looking in the sky and saying, I saw weird lights. I mean very, very hardcore evidence. And many of the great pioneers like Zacharias Sitchin and, of course, Eric Van Doneghan have actually taken the world's history over a period of time and looked at what's going on and said, hey, there's some continuity here. Even the Catholic Church has come up to that and said, well, maybe we have to rethink our position. Let's listen to this clip from the same. This is all, by the way, from the History Channel, Ancient Aliens.
In May of 2008, a startling proclamation was issued by the Vatican. For the first time in its 2,000-year history, the Catholic Church acknowledged the possibility that intelligent life could exist on other planets, and that a belief in extraterrestrials did not contradict a belief in God.
So there's an interesting point that's being raised, I think, that I don't understand why people have a problem with this. This is really, it goes all the way back to religion and history throughout the ages. You know, the first religion on the planet was Mother Earth. 10,000 years ago, man didn't even know why a woman got pregnant. I believe it was longer than that. All of a sudden, you know, just the woman's stomach would grow and out would pop a baby. Hence the worship of mom, the woman, the wombs, excuse me, was created. By the same token, in my opinion, if any of us were to go back in time, say, oh, I don't know, Egyptian time or, of course, in the BC era, and we brought with us common items, flashlight, telephone, camera, firearm, lighter, what have you, we would probably be deemed as either gods or devils, because that's pretty much how the entire known illiterate world was based upon. Everything was spiritual. Everything was God-based. Everything was supernatural. An eclipse was supernatural. An earthquake, a volcano, it was all God. And, of course, 2,000 years later, we realized that's not necessarily the case. So what is the problem? What is the problem with people? Why do we have such an issue of accepting the possibility that, hey, maybe we're not the only ones that are out here? Maybe a lot of what we think and our entire belief system of what we consider to be God or gods is based on specious logic or ill-labeled situations. Why is that so implausible? I don't understand. 400 years ago, the world was flat, remember? Oh, and then, of course, Galileo Galilei and Copernicus and all of these other people said, no, this is not true. And, of course, Galileo was put under house arrest for 22 years, I believe, as a result of his outlandish and blasphemous statements. And we find out that's true. So why are we so apt to defend our belief systems simply based on the fact that it doesn't coincide with what we believe? You know, I just really find that hard to believe. Eric Van Doneghan's book, A Chariot to the Gods, is probably one of the greatest books that started the whole fire. I'm not promoting Eric Van Doneghan's book, but Chariot to the Gods is a fantastic book. And it detailed and chronicled a myriad of events that have taken place throughout history, throughout time. And it wasn't the 95% of the explainables in antiquity. It was the 1% of the unexplainables in antiquity that we all care about. I mean, how does a 50-ton block of granite get moved into the plains of Peru? And the nearest quarry is some 5 miles away. And the rocks are so precisely put together that you can't even put a human hair between them. I mean, I used to be in construction myself, and that's an almost impossibility today, let alone 50 tons. There's so much architecture and so much engineering, ancient engineering, that we can't even mimic today. Yet we think that primitive man coming out of basically caves and an instantaneous, literally almost overnight, had agriculture and democracy and aqueducts and architecture and horticulture all overnight, just like that, huh? I don't understand. It's like the O.J. Simpson case. I mean, you have the evidence. It is what it is. Now, you can make your own conclusions, but it is what it is. You can't dispel the facts. The facts are what they are. Here's a piece with Eric Van Doneghem talking about, in fact, what his findings were over the course of writing his book, Chariots of the Gods.
For example, in the first book of Moses, before the law descends on the holy mountain, Moses was ordered to construct a gate around the mountain. Otherwise, the Israelites would be damaged. I was shocked. I said, this is impossible. My God, he would never use first a gate to protect himself or to protect the Israelites. What are they talking about? And now the work started. I started to read thousands of pages of the beginning of religions, of every mythology. It's always the same story. Of course, with different names, with different heroes. Somebody descends from the sky to the humans. Our forefathers could not understand it. They believed that these are some gods. I was shocked. I asked the question, were primitive humans influenced by extraterrestrials, not gods? And if it all was like I suggested, where is the proof? So you start trying to find at least indications. That's what I have done now for at least 45 years. You have pictorial evidence, you have artifacts in archaeology, and you have what came out of the old literature. Hundreds of indications which you cannot deny anymore.
So, and that's a pressing fact. A pressing point. If in a court of law, imagine people are sentenced to death by our Supreme Court, the highest court in the land, and by our judicial system. The courts have established that certain types of evidence is permissible to the point where it can actually condemn a man to death. Think about this. If there was even close to physical artifacts or photographs or, of course, eyewitness testimony to a particular crime. Now, let me stop for a moment. Eyewitness testimony has been shown to, I believe, have only I'm not really certain about the exact figure, but I know something to the effect of 40%, I believe, of the eyewitness testimonies in courts are inaccuracy, have inaccuracies. 40%, that's almost half. So if that's the case, and in so many cases people are wrongly incarcerated, why on earth can it apply? Why on earth with proof that actually has a greater significance in this extraterrestrial alien field, why is that evidence shunned? Like, oh, it's hogwash. It means nothing. If we're in a court of law, the exact same evidences would actually be considered valid and viable. I don't understand that. We have a couple callers. If you're listening right now, we have our phone lines open at 213-943-3625. I welcome any and all points of view and positions regarding what your feelings are on. Do you think aliens are the real deal? Do you not think they are? On what your belief system is. Beliefs, in fact, I want to get into that for a moment. I was just talking to somebody last night about this very subject. You know, we have to accept the fact that there's only one truth in the universe. There's only one truth, and that is right now. There is no other way life is happening in this third-dimensional reality. It's only going on the way it is right this second. So my perspective, my opinions, my feelings has no bearing on the truth. The, with a capital T, capital T. My opinion doesn't have anything to do with how something took place. It could. My opinion might be the truth, but then again, it might not be. But most of life happens all and only one way. And I find that it's interesting how people believe what they believe, and they think because they believe it, it's true. Well, that's not necessarily true. We've got some interesting facts such as this year. Let's take a listen to this clip here.
But as controversial as many of von Daniken's theories are, believers point to tangible evidence. How, for example, could a centuries-old map chart a landmass that has only recently been discovered?
It would tend to indicate that the map was made at a time when Antarctica was ice-free, which would be many millions of years ago.
And how could a primitive civilization know how to harness electricity or even build a computer?
This was tantamount to finding a jet airplane in the tomb of King Tut.
And just who were these mysterious designs, only visible from high altitudes, intended for?
The signs are made for somebody who flies. There's no way out of this.
Could von Daniken's theory that ancient gods were really alien visitors contain any serious scientific merit? The answer involves a search around the world, and even right before our eyes.
Interesting. Quite interesting. How would we have the ability to, or somebody, some peoples, have the ability to chart a map of a landmass that didn't even exist for millions of years? How would that be possible? It would be very difficult for us to do in our current technology with X-ray technology, or I'm not sure how they would pierce through a mile-thick ice sheet into the ground, into the actual Earth above the Antarctic region. But I find it interesting that we would be very difficult to do something like that today. Several thousand years ago, they had an almost perfect replica of Antarctica. That's just one of 10,000 things, folks. Okay, evidence. Let's go back to the court of law. If that was permissible in a court of law, would it hold ground? Of course it would. That would be very supreme evidence. We've got the fact of this map. It exists. And, of course, we can check it against the geography and topography, and there it would match. So, you know, you could make your own conclusion. Another fact, there's so many different areas. For instance, there's a gentleman by the name of Dr. Roger Lear. He's a pioneering researcher of the alleged alien implants. He just passed away recently. But this is a doctor who actually devoted his life. Now, the skeptic community talks about how they need proof. Yet when we bring actual proof, such as metal that doesn't collapse, and somehow folds back out, that's as thin as aluminum foil and stronger than carbon fiber, how come that's not considered proof? Richard Lear, the general doctor, MD, who actually got into, surgeon, who got into removing alien, objects out of people. And he found this interest in these objects that were being found in people. I remember seeing an X-ray of a man of his head. This gentleman had appeared to be a BB-size object in the center of his eyeball. He complained about headaches and eye aches and whatnot. When they did the X-ray, they found there was something inside of the center of his eye. Now, there's nothing we could do. We couldn't put that in there and have him see fine and has his vision, okay, let alone pull it out of there. Yet, there it is on the X-ray, a nice BB-sized object in the center of this guy's eye. There have been countless artifacts of alien, or let's call them unfamiliar, okay, or unrecognized objects out of people's skin. Okay, let's take a look at, I'll read something here. It says, the ANS research website explains that these objects have been scientifically investigated by some of the most prestigious laboratories in the world, including Los Alamos National Labs, New Mexico Tech, SEAL Laboratories, Southwest Labs, the University of Toronto, York University, and the University of California at San Diego, probably Scripps. Their findings have been baffling, and some comparisons have been made to meteorite samples. In addition, some of these tests show metallurgic anomalies, such as highly magnetic iron that is without crystalline form, combinations of crystalline materials, mixed common metals, growth of biological tissue, into or out of metallic substances, as well as isotopic ratios not of this world. Okay, so this is Los Alamos, people. Los Alamos is one of the top laboratories on planet Earth. It doesn't get any better than that. And so if Los Alamos and San Diego and et cetera, Mexico Tech, New Mexico Tech, these are the top laboratories in the world saying, we don't know what this is. We have no idea. Why wouldn't that be accepted as proof? I mean, it's not my opinion. You know, much of what we do in life, folks, is not our opinion. You get up, you get dressed, you eat breakfast, you get in your car, you drive to your work, you do your job, you come back home, you make dinner, and you go to sleep. You know, if you were telling me about your life in that fashion, what'd you do today? How was your day? And you said it just that way. That's the way it happened. It's not your opinion how your life went by, went down. I got up, I had breakfast, I got dressed, and et cetera. That's not my opinion. That's actually the truth. It's actually what took place. Okay, so this is the same thing. This isn't my opinion that Los Alamos cannot understand or have a trouble deciphering or are unfamiliar with. Whatever their statements are regarding their subject material, it is what it is. Crystalline materials mixed with common metals and growth of biological tissue into or out of metallic substances, that is what it is. And in the court of law, if they had one of the scientists on the stand, witness stand, talking about as a witness regarding this court case, I am sure that this information would be well acceptable, would be very acceptable. I don't understand why it's, you know, there's a problem with that area of contention that a lot of people have wanted to kind of run circles around and be skeptical about is crop circles. Now, here's what ends up happening, folks. You have different kinds of information out there. There is information, there is misinformation, and then there is dis with the D, disinformation. People purposely trying to alter the truth and the facts. And so what ends up happening is somebody takes a story. Let's take crop circles. Then some two yahoos go out and mimic a crop circle and say, yeah, we did this last night. We've done 10 of them. And the skeptic community points the finger and says, see, kind of like a witch hunt. We told you it was a bunch of phony baloney. We told you it was all fake. And that's the kind of specious, ridiculous logic that the skeptic community has. Okay, I'm a skeptic just like a lot of people. I'm not leaning towards something because I want to believe. I'm leaning towards something because it's there. I don't believe in gravity because I feel it that way. I believe it because it's there. I don't believe in oxygen because I feel it. I believe it because it's there. It is what it is. And even if I don't believe in gravity or oxygen or fire, it doesn't mean that it goes away. So even if you don't believe in the evidences of alien implants or crop circles or what have you, it doesn't mean that it's not true or that it goes away or that it's unprecedented. I mean, unfounded. You know, it is what it is. You know, crop circles have been around for thousands of years. You know, I remember seeing this one. It's a 780-foot crop circle in the form of double six-sided circles, and it's composed of 409 circles. 409 perfect circles in a sort of triskelion pattern. That there's no way that somebody could have done this with a floorboard and some rope in a field at night within several hours with perfect symmetry. Sorry, I just don't buy it. Logically, that would not be plausible. It's possible, but within the constraints of what I'm saying, I seriously doubt that case. And so people, unfortunately, they don't want to go against their belief systems. And I find that amazing how they think that with a couple of little falsities in that particular arena, that it colloquializes all, if it's false in this particular area, it's false in all areas. I find that very, very interesting. So if anybody has got something to say, I would love to hear their opinion about this. Here is something that actually someone does have to say on the negative. Take a listen.
It created a storm of controversy. I was completely attacked, especially by the scientific newspapers. They said, come on, he's just telling story. He's a liar or he's a fraud or whatever.
There is not a single piece of evidence that von Däniken puts forward that cannot be attributed to human ingenuity, technology, and development.
Don't try to reduce the scriptures to a science book, or don't try to reduce the scriptures to an explanation of our modern world today.
There's not been a single side. What did he say? A single aspect that it wasn't dealt with humans. Well, of course, silly. I'm sure there was some sort of human involvement in the area surrounding that. But it doesn't mean that humans were the engineers of said anomalies. It's unbelievable. All one has to do is go up on YouTube and see what's there. Now, I know there's a lot of CGI, computer graphic imaging, et cetera, and it's getting more difficult now, more and more difficult, because there's a lot more game players out there who are actually trying to paint. And I'm not giving the argument for pro or against. I'm just saying let's be fair in our investigative behavior, in our investigative research. You can't very well have 500 pieces of evidence and go down the line and say, no good, no good, no good. When, you know, in another situation, like a murder trial, that evidence would be good, good, good. We have to be fair and compare apples for apples, oranges for oranges with regards to what is real and what is Memorex, like the commercial used to say, or what is real and what is opinion, or what is real and what is, perspective, et cetera. And I think that one of the larger problems that we have with humanity is that we're just afraid to challenge our belief systems. Look, people, I got to tell you, one of the inevitable realities of all life is change. It will take place. Change will happen, and it will take place. And it might be hard for some, but that's just the way it is.
He who breaks the law goes back to the house of pain.
He who breaks the law goes back to the house of pain.
Or actually, you go back to the house of belief systems. Beliefs are like a-holes. Everybody has one. You know, it really doesn't mean a hell of a lot in the bigger scope of things. It means a lot to that individual. It is beliefs, opinions, perspectives, feelings have nothing to do, ladies and gentlemen, with the truth. The truth, as the Bible has said, will set you free. But it is the truth, not my truth, not yours, not the truth. I'm talking on this airway as we speak right now, the way I'm speaking. And that's the way it is. And if nobody believes me, that's okay, because it already has happened in time, and there's nothing we can do about going backwards. The same thing with regards to evidences all around the world in a myriad of subjects. It is what it is. These circles are here, or these implants are there, what have you. There's just an unending amount of evidence that's going on. And so what if this evidence was actually taken place throughout the history of time? And that the people, remember now, 97% of the planet, 97% of the planet was illiterate. 98% of the planet was illiterate. You got to remember that. And it was a small amount of people. There was only 1 billion people born in the history of planet Earth up to about 1850. And from 1851 till 2015, we have got over 6.4 billion more people born. So over 1 billion people primarily were illiterate all throughout the dawn of time. I find it interesting that here's another fact. I can't remember. I have to pull up the website. But there is a huge array of paintings throughout history. And you can find it under, I think, ancient art. These are some of the most famous paintings in the world. And for some odd name, here, I'll even bring them up right now. For some strange reason, these artists have painted a little creature, a little object up in the air. The Baptism of Christ, Fitzwilliam Museum, Cambridge, England, painted in 1710 by Flemish artist Art de Gelder, depicts a classic hovering silvery saucer-shaped UFO shining beams of light down on John the Baptist. Okay? Why would this individual, Art de Gelder, why would he paint this? You know, the crucifixion hangs above the altar at the Visoki Dečani Moon Monastery in Kosovo, Yugoslavia. It was painted in 1350. On either side of Jesus are a pair of Jetsons, like sky cars, one chasing the other. The pilots apparently working controls. The leading craft is decorated with two twinkling stars. Why? I mean, I'm looking straight at it. You can look it up yourself. I'm looking at a man indefinitely in some kind of craft, rounded and pointed, with flames jetting out of the back, out of the rear. Now, this is in 1350 that this took place. There are countless, countless paintings. Here's another. The Madonna with St. Giovannino. Above Mary's left shoulder is a shining or glowing disc-shaped object. A man and his dog can clearly be seen looking up at the floating object in the composite below. Painted in the 15th century, Palazzo Vecchio lists the artist as unknown, although attributed to the Lippi school. I've seen this painting many. You've seen this painting many times. It's the Madonna with sun and praying, and there's a man pointing up to a UFO in the background. Why? And if you look at it, you can clearly see this is not a rock or a star or a bird or a whatever. It says upon closer inspection, the man seems to be looking away from the UFO behind him and over his shoulder, or more likely, the notably out of the place object may be imagined floating above the ground between them. It goes on. There's another one. The Annunciation, painted by Carlo Crivelli in 1486, on display at the National Gallery in London. A familiar disc-shaped object is shining a beam of light through the house wall and down into the top of Mary's head. Much activity is going on in this painting besides people pointing, filled with cryptic symbolism, the meanings lost to modern researchers. And I've only touched upon three. There are dozens of paintings throughout the end of time. Why is this a problem? I don't understand why that poses a threat or a problem. I am looking for another site. Again, we want factual, in your hands proof. Well, there's a book called Hidden Archaeology, and it is along the same lines, where many objects have been found throughout time, throughout the turn of the Industrial Revolution, where we're digging and mining and digging and mining, okay, all around the world. It's from Michael Cremo. Forbidden Archaeology. I remember I've read this book. Fascinating book. Fascinating book. Looking at all of the different things, items, artifacts that have actually been found all over the world. And the scientific community wants to shun these facts. You know, I find that, again, how is that possible that in a court of law, this would be irrefutable proof? You know, the murder weapon or what have you. But this archaeological find, oh, no, it doesn't go along with our current viewpoint, so we're just going to go ahead and shun it away. That's a little suspicious, to say the least. Here is a piece from Forbidden Archaeology, the knowledge filter and scientific suppression. One of the prominent themes introduced in Forbidden Archaeology is a phenomenon of knowledge filtration. This is the process by which scientists and others routinely accept evidences that supports their preconceptions and theories. while rejecting either consciously or unconsciously other evidence that does not uphold their views. This process of suppression of evidence is illuminated by many of these anomalous paleoanthropological findings discussed in the book. This evidence now tends to be extremely obscure and is also tends to be clouded by a series of negative reports, themselves obscure and dating from the time when the evidence was being actively rejected. Thus, evolutionary prejudices held by powerful groups of scientists act as a knowledge filter, which has eliminated evidence of challenging accepted views and left us with a radically altered understanding of human origins and antiquity. So, and then if you look at many of the religious books of today, it's that same filter. You know, the Bible is what it is because, and the books of the Bible are what they are because of the canonization and the Council of Trent and the Council of Hippo. I believe it was Constantinople in 323, I believe. And it was nothing more than having a bunch of It was nothing more than having a bunch of bishops saying, okay, is this true or is this false? Is this accurate or is this inaccurate? That's what gave us canonization. Why the books of the Bible are in there. They're in what they are. And so if that's the case, how do we know that it's the truth? Because it goes with our belief system, because it fits curtly into a nice little neat package that we can actually, you know, uphold with our ideologies and our beliefs, even though the facts and the truth are what they are. I find that very interesting and suspicious. When they said that the skeptics don't want to look at the evidence and that it can be all attributed to man's intervention or man's doing, hogwash. It's hogwash. I find that this is what it's put succinctly by George Norrie.
People want answers to questions that they can't answer themselves.
That's right. And so when we don't get the answers, we make things up. Or, you know, in the old days, of course, we've made things up. We've attributed to God or the devil constantly. There was a story on National Public Radio. I think I'm going to look for it. If I can find it, I can read it. But they actually discovered why the Salem witch hunt took place and why those poor women were killed. They actually found scientific fact, I believe, as to the truth, what actually took place. And what I'm looking for it as I speak online, but from my understanding, and this, it was a fascinating story, the way it appears is that the bags of rye grain in the bottom of the cellars in New England were becoming fermented, and rye has an unusual ability, from what I understand, to produce a sort of a psychedelic drug or a psilocybin, maybe a pseudo psilocybin. And literally, these women were tripping. They were under like a pseudo LSD, if you will. And of course, that was not to be accepted nor to be explained. And so we had the witchcraft craze. And hundreds, I imagine hundreds of women were burned literally alive at the stake. And they could not attribute to what the problem, what the source of it was. Of course, we're talking the 1650s. Now, you got to think about it. This is how man thought. This is still how man thinks. We attribute what we don't know to the ethereal plane, to the spiritual, the demonic, the Godhead, or what have you. I always say science and religion is the same thing from two different perspectives. And much the case, it really is, because the whole universe is science. The whole universe is one ginormous petri dish of chemistry. Everything is chemistry, everything. Every subatomic particle in the sun and in our bodies. It's all chemistry. It's all one ginormous petri dish. So why wouldn't it be scientific? Well, we don't always know what the answers are, of course, but we're always looking for them. And when we're looking at the subject title here for the show, Truth versus Opinion, how truth-oriented are you? Do you subscribe to truth because it is the truth, or do you subscribe to truth because you believe? You know, the old saying, if a tree falls in the forest and you're not there to hear it, does it make a sound? Of course it makes a sound. What kind of asinine statement is that? Why do my ears have anything to do with that tree making actually vibration frequency from hitting the earth? It has nothing to do that. So by the same token, the attitudes and belief systems of man of antiquity and current day, contemporary man, kind of bases his belief systems on how it fits within his confines of his ideology, or not his ideologies, but of his community of beliefs. You know, a really good example, I love this story also, is when Cortez came and allegedly, you know, he discovered what was already been discovered, which was already inhabited, but commonly known as the Yucatan, which is Mexico. And from what I understand, in the article that I read, he had three ships, and they were moored in the bay. And they didn't get off their boats for a couple of weeks for some reason. Now, the people knew that something was going on. There was something going on in the water, but they could not put their fingers on it, simply because they just didn't see these ships. They physically couldn't see the ships. So one of the shaman who knew something was going on, you know, stood around and looked and looked and waited and looked and studied. And finally, the ships on the water, moored in the water, finally came into focus. He finally got, hey, there are three big objects out there. I wonder what these are. Now, there's a logical, neurological reason why this actually takes place. In fact, many of you, myself included, have probably experienced it. You buy a spice from the store, and let's say the manufacturer changes the wrapping paper of the spice from blue to red, and you put it right in the front of your shelf, and lo and behold, you're looking all over the place for it, and it's sitting right in front of your face. Why? Because our brain has the visual of it was a blue label, not a red label. And we pass it over 50 times, and there it is staring us right in the face. Okay, because we didn't reference to the blue label. Or the new label. The same thing with the Indians in Mexico. They had no frame of reference. They had no technological reference as to what a ship, a triple mast, you know, 80-foot ship was. They had canoes. That's it. So, you know, their frame of reference was minimal at best. And so, hence, the same thing goes in the past. You know, the same kinds of attitudes from the Quran, the Bible, the Latter-day Saints, from all of the books, the same kinds of things. Unexplained events, not understanding how to figure out what this is, or not how, but from where it comes from, not understanding its origin. And then, of course, considering that it must be something of God. What else could it be? I mean, like I said earlier, if I walked into time, backwards into time, and I actually had the things that we all take for granted right now, we would be considered probably, this is my opinion, gods or devils. You know, and so I remember this story, another great story. I love this one. I just saw this on the news too, that, and I'm going to try to paraphrase it here, summarize it here, but I believe it was during the World War II campaign when the transport C-114 transfer planes were being sent back and forth, and they were passing over Papua New Guinea. Now, Papua New Guinea, for those of you who don't know, is one of the most remote places on planet Earth, the most remote. As a matter of fact, I think it has the largest dialects of any country, 700 different dialects, I believe. These people don't even know how old they are. Imagine that. These people to this day don't even have necessarily metal tools. The women wear skirts because they think that some spirit actually will enter through the bottom of a woman and impregnate her. So during the Vietnam War, transport planes were flying over and actually dropping sea rations on their beaches, just flying over, dropping them, and leaving. They were receiving all kinds of canned goods. Then later on, when the war was over, later on, a journalist crew went over to Papua New Guinea, I don't know, maybe for National Geographic or something, and wanted to do a report on what was going on. And lo and behold, they found in the midst of one of the villages about a 10-foot long, 8-foot wide straw replica of a C-114 transport cargo plane. There it was, right? They were worshiping this bird god. You don't believe me, folks? Look it up. And so they couldn't believe that they actually worshiped this god who brought them food and good cheer. And then one day just disappeared, and they kind of wanted it to come back. So this was, what, in the 70s? 60s, 70s? Can you imagine how people would have revered other events, other astronomical, astrological, geographical, what have you, anomalies that took place all over the world? Can you imagine how primitive man would actually have identified these things at that time? Of course, we had angels and we had devils and flashes of light and God and so many things going on, which really, is it the truth? Is that really the truth? Is there really a boogeyman under your bed, according to a 3-year-old child? Well, to the child there is, but is there really a boogeyman? No, that's just their perception. So it just all kind of, you know, comes full circle. It all comes full circle where the evidences are the evidence. And we need to people, my whole point of this show for today is wake up. Don't have beliefs unless the beliefs work for you in a positive way. Just because we believe it doesn't make it true. Right? Just because we believe it doesn't make it true. There is only one truth. The truth is irrefutable. Irrefutable. Okay? That means that if all of us didn't believe that there was gravity and we wanted to jump off the roof, 100% of us are going to fall. Not one person is going to float. It doesn't matter what they believe. It doesn't matter what they think. It's all going to take place. 7 billion people are going to fall to their death. That's what I mean when I say truth. It's that level, like gravity, like heat, like, you know, things that are in this third-dimensional reality. I'm not talking fourth or fifth dimensions. I'm not going out there. I'm just talking the here and now. And so with that, I really invite people to not worry about the belief. Like I said, let's go back to the subject of crop circles. I love crop circles. I think they're phenomenal. A gentleman named Jaime Masson, one of the most profound crop circles in the history of the planet, actually found a crop circle that was near in England. I'm looking for it right now. And let me get to the still to finish the whole story. And I believe it was Carl Sagan, I believe, sent out a message to, we sent out a binary code message out in space in like 1973, something like that. And it actually contained many things like the DNA of humans, our place in the solar system, the human genome. I can't remember. There's like 5 or 6 things. We just basically encoded a message and sent it out into space. Years later, okay, a crop circle appeared with the answer. And if you look up Jaime Masson, he is, I guess, a UFOologist and investigator. He's one of the top Hispanic ufologists and researchers. He explains this is phenomenal. he compared what we sent out in space compared to what came back in space. And lo and behold, it was as if somebody just straight answered all of the questions that were out there. Unprecedented, unbelievable. So we sent out, to simplify it, we sent out 4 + 4 = and they said 8. The capital of the United States is, you know, not that simplistic, of course, but it was along those lines. And not to mention, it was in a binary code, by the way, the answer. And then there was a picture right next to it of a giant, huge, I think it was a football field tall and a half football field wide. It was huge, of a picture of a gray alien head. Now, again, if you go back to that skeptic position, how on earth would anybody be able to do such a thing in just a short period of time? Not to mention that this particular crop circle was a mere 50 feet from the British naval, a British naval satellite dish, and that's manned and over and manned and guarded 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. 50 feet away, there's this naval intelligence place that nobody saw anything, right? Not two men or three men making this crop circle in the middle of the night, of course. It was, it had to be a false. It had to be a farce, right? It had to be two kids making a prank, yeah, right next to naval intelligence in the middle of the night and all within a matter of an hour or so. It's one of the most incredible, one of the most incredible crop circles, not just for what it stands for, but for the answers that it gave. And that's nothing to throw away. That is a very, very significant finding, extremely. You know, you can't just throw this away. This is, again, primary evidence in a court of law. This is extremely credible. And the reason I say this is because we can constantly tell, we can weed out what it's not. We can't necessarily find out what it is. We know what it's not. And we know that it's not hoax. We know that it's not two or three guys doing what they're doing in the middle of the night just to disregard the veracity of this being a possible truth. I'm looking at the website now. There are so many things that are unbelievable. I remember seeing crop circles that were literally three-dimensional from the air. If you looked at them from the air, it absolutely appears as if it's coming out at you. You know, like the circle is it's not a circle. It was a binary code, I believe, or it was an isotope. It was an elemental isotope, an unknown elemental isotope, I believe. But they stood out three-dimensional from the air. And it was unbelievable. I've never seen. This is only wheatgrass, wheat. And they made such a picture that it was three-dimensional. What person on the planet could do that? Not to mention some other facts, like the fibers of these plants aren't just bent over. That's another amazing phenomenon. Not the fiber, the stalk, excuse me. The stalk of these plants actually are growing in a 45-degree angle. They're not broken. They're little nodules, just like an elbow, from the stalk of each wheatgrass in many, many instances. And it is, has where it would be bent to a left or a right 45-degree angle. There is a nodule, like a almost not a hinge, but it would look like an elbow, and it's growing now horizontally. That grass stem is now growing horizontally. Okay, yeah, you're going to tell me that's a hoax? I don't buy it, and I believe other people wouldn't buy it either. There's just too much that's out there to see. And the thing is, everybody needs to pay attention and be their own truth finder, if you will. Be their own judge, prosecutor, and jury. you know, and look at it for what it is, not for what I believe it is. You know, it is what it is. There's so many things that are unexplained. And guess what? That's okay. That's perfectly fine. Here, I don't know if anybody's ever heard of out there, but there's a whole new creature. And I don't mean just an animal. I'm going to play a clip of this as well. But there is a creature that is called a rod. Okay, a rod, R-O-D. They call them rods because they look like rods. They look like batons flying in at over 100 miles an hour. And it's very, very difficult to see. I mean, they're very difficult to catch, I should say. People have seen them all over the world. But they don't want to utilize this as a possibility. They want to call it skeptic, okay? A skepticism. Here, let's see if we can get a clip from this and maybe hear a snippet of this real quick.
Thoughts or blind translucent creatures, they could be all around you, even though you can't see them. But what are they?
Unit 13, J. David Rose went south of the border.
So this is the Channel 13 News, and I believe San Diego. They're called rods, and they are everywhere. They're flying around everywhere. Even the news crew of this. I don't know if you folks could hear that because it wasn't a clip that was actually off of the. I didn't load it. It might have come out a little distorted, but these creatures, you can look them up again. They are what they are. We do not know what they are. They have no head, no tail. They look like a baton with wavy wings, like as if they're swimming in the air. Very, very strange. No one's ever seen these before. Who knows from where they come from or even what they are. But we do know that it's something. Okay, and so that's my point. There's nothing, you know, we don't have to discount it. We don't have to have an answer. We don't have to figure out what it is or isn't. It just is what it is. Okay, and if we can't figure it out, we can't figure it out. That's okay. That's why I find this so interesting. There's another creature that was found, for instance, a small creature that was actually found in Mexico by a farmer, and they have the physical skeleton, folks, to show what this thing is. Let's see if we can't get a little listen of this clip. We only got a couple minutes left.
This strange creature was found on a farm in Mexico. The farmer drowned it out of fear. Since the end of 2008, researchers have been carrying out tests on the corpse, but the mystery is deepening. Even serious scientists are wondering if this creature comes from another planet. The tests showed that the being is not known to exist on Earth. Its body has characteristics of both lizards and humans. It also has a large brain, a sign that it was probably highly intelligent. There are frequent UFO sightings and reports of crop circles in the area, leading to the suspicion that the being was left behind by aliens.
This is not hidden information, folks. This is actually right on YouTube if you want. It's there. It exists. It is real. And to the skeptic world, I have to say, go do your homework. Take your belief systems and shove them back into the closet from where they came because they don't need to be a part of the truth. The truth has no beliefs. Well, I hope that this show was somewhat interesting, and I hope that it did its purpose, which is to invoke your thoughts and your questions about your environment. Truth Addicts is a show to help that facilitate that possibility. We want to thank you for listening. come back next week at 12 o'clock Sunday, and we will have an entirely new topic to debate over. Well, I want to say thank you to everybody listening, and I hope everybody has a wonderful weekend and a wonderful rest of the week. Till then, take care.